Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. How's Canada?
Canada is a lot better today because my book is printing.
Yay. And Canada's rejoicing. Done.
The entire country is, I'm sure, aware of it and waving flags and going, woohoo! Sarah's book is done. It's printing. I can't actually make any changes now, so I can't actually work on it. Woohoo!
Yeah, just don't look at it.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. Someone actually sent me an email the next morning that was like, what about this food question? Because I get a lot of those. And I was like, I've never heard of that food before. And I look it up, I was like, oh, that would have been really good to include in the food list on the cookbook. Second printing, I'll add it. But yeah, so it's this huge weight off my shoulders, but really I haven't had a moment to actually appreciate that or feel it because the book went to print on the same day as my new sister-in-law's bridal shower, and then there was a special meeting of the family's party, and then the next day was the rehearsal and the rehearsal dinner, and then Saturday was the wedding. And so we went straight from like book craziness to wedding craziness, and then the day after the wedding, we went to the gift opening brunch, and then we hopped in the car and drove the few hours up island to my mother-in-law's house. So I'm actually in my mother-in-law's house now. And it's just been like, you know, next thing, next thing, next thing. And so it's been really, I don't know when it will hit me that this book is actually done. As my husband was sort of saying, he's like, it's the first time in 21 months you're not working on a book. Like, what are you going to do now? And I started listing off like all the things that I have on my plate still that I, you know, that I have to work on, that I have to do, like, you know, that I'd love to start actually writing my own content for the blog, because my poor blog has been mostly guest posts for the last like month and a half, 2 months. And, you know, I've got all of these other things that I want to be working on. And I said, I really don't think I'm going to be bored, which would be cool, but I don't think boredom's in my future.
I'm trying to plan in boredom. Like, wouldn't it be nice to just have nothing to do?
Oh, I don't know what that would feel like anymore. It has been so long since I've had anything like that kind of space in my life. I mean, really, my goal for the fall is to really put a lot of effort into work-life balance. And that is actually, like, really, that's the next thing that I'm going to work on. That's my next project. So as much as I have, you know, other things that I'm working on, and as much as I'm trying to get back to doing more science writing for the blog, and I've got some recipe ideas I want to work on and things like that, I'm trying to not have deadlines right now, so that if I want to take a night off and watch a movie with my husband, there's no negative consequences to doing that. And I'm trying to fit in, some more, I guess, could sort of connect with nature things. I don't know if I told you this, but there's a couple of stables near my home, and I want to try out horseback riding this fall.
That'd be cool.
So it's kind of one of my things. Like, there's two stables that are about the same distance. They both have really, really great reputations. And I'm going to go, I think, just talk with each of them and, you know, make sure that they're, you know, taking care of their horses and all of those things. But I just kind of want to do something really different that I've never done before. You know, cause CrossFit's not challenging. I don't know. loving CrossFit, but I want to do something like I'm more connecting with nature. And I think that, you know, connecting with this, you know, these majestic, powerful animals kind of, it intrigues me. So, so I have all of these like ideas of ways that I can protect my mental health in addition to my physical health. I think I've done a really good job with the cookbook and protecting my physical health and making sure that my, even the late nights that I was pulling towards the end were nowhere near as late as the late nights that I was pulling with the paleo approach. I was really good at making sure I was staying active. And, you know, I did a really good job. I think, well, I didn't wake up the next day with pneumonia. So that I think is testament.
That's not really a good baseline, however.
Right. But, you know, I think I did a much better job looking after myself physically, but I kind of feel like, I feel like there's a missing piece in terms of my emotional and mental well-being that I've been kind of ignoring. So I want to make sure that I'm just spending more quality time with my family. And we're actually starting to talk about like planning a real like family vacation. We haven't really, you know, trip home isn't really the same thing as planning like a, you know, just our nuclear family vacation. So we're starting to talk about those kinds of things. And you know, I think that's, you know, that basically it amounts to, you know, really trying to prioritize finding better work-life balance so that for the next book, when I start that project, it's, I just want to structure my life differently. So rather than my life revolving around the book kind of fits into my life. And that's, I think, going to be a healthier way to work on a book in the future. So, you know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot in the last nearly 2 years of this crazy, crazy project, which, you know, that means we've been podcasting for almost, how long have we been podcasting for?
I think this is episode 99.
This is episode 99. We are nearly on episode 100.
So that reminds me that people should check out our social media. I'm going to have an announcement. You already had one. And feel free to email us through the contact form on both of our websites. We're going to have a special show next week where we answer anything that you ask us, and our assistants are actually screening the questions. So we will literally have no idea and just tell you. But what I was going to say is that the work-life balance thing is really important. It's something I've talked about a lot. And for me personally, there was a moment about 2 months ago where Amy was coming over to photo shoot. Maybe it was longer than 2 months ago. I don't remember. But and I explained to Finn that once again, he needed to go find something to do because Amy was coming to photo shoot and he basically needed to get out of our hair. And I said it very nicely, but that's the gist. And he knew that that was the gist. And he asked us to not do books anymore. He asked if this could be our last book because he really missed us.
Oh, and that breaks my heart.
Yeah, and so he's six. For him to, you know, and we've always been very, very open and honest with the boys. Like, we do this for not just, you know, our family, but we do it for other families, and we tell them about people that, you know, email us and people who contact us on media, and we, you know, try to explain to them why we think this is important, and they wholeheartedly have always been on board and supportive, and they think it's cool, and they've been engaged. But, you know, when it gets to the point where the kids are like, "Mommy, we miss you, and we want you to not work on the book all the time. We want to have time with you." To me, that's a prioritization in our life. Like, we've never made the blog and the books something that our family needs to do. It's something that we do because we want to. And having the ability to say, okay, this is our last book because we really need to slow down and focus on the family, is something that we purposely set our lives up that way so that we could do that if and when it happened. And so we will definitely be taking, Matt and I have agreed that we won't even think about doing another book until Wesley's in kindergarten, so that he potentially could if we decided we wanted to do something else, do it while Wesley's in school, while all the boys are in school, and at no other times. Because right now, Wesley is not in school, which means that usually he does it when Wesley's taking a nap, because Wesley is the baby who's in the most need of attention. And when Wesley's taking a nap is usually when the boys are getting home from school and want Matt's attention. So it's just, it's been difficult, as people can imagine, because we get asked all the time, how do we do it? And I know for you, you have the same struggles. And I think it's important for people to recognize that, you know, those kinds of struggles and dealing with the realities of making your life work for you are very important. And I hope that Sarah and I can both be an example of what works and what doesn't work, so that you can figure out from your own life how, you know, things that you could potentially do to set up your own life for success. And, you know, for example, I stayed in the house and the cars that we've had for years, and so that we don't, you know, depend on certain other sources of income, so that, you know, if we decided to stop, we could. And I know that that's a different decision for everybody, but, you know, for me, I would rather drive my used Prius than go get the convertible that I really want, even though I can't afford it, because I don't want to have to need to have that money. So anyway,
You want a convertible?
Oh my gosh, really?
I was gonna talk about this whole setting yourself up for success thing, because that, like, got this whole thing. But then you said you want a convertible. I'm like,
yeah, really? I really want a Volkswagen Eos or a Mini Cooper, both a hardtop convertible. I grew up in I grew up in the beach, like. Convertibles. I love the wind in my hair. I've been waiting for the boys to all be out of car seats, because, like, you can't fit car seats in the back of either of those cars. Trust me, I've test driven them. And so, I've been waiting for them to be big enough. And now that they're big enough, I'm like, nah, I don't really want a car payment.
So I was going to say, though, I liked one of the phrases you used about you structuring your life to set you up for success. And I just want to expand on that slightly and kind of remind people that success doesn't necessarily mean that you've got the big house and you've got the, you know, convertible and you've got, you know, like, you know, all the fancy furniture or, you know, great big electronics or whatever it is. I mean, when I hear those words, for me, setting yourself up for success is setting yourself up for physical and emotional health. It's setting yourself up to be happy and to be healthy. And sometimes those things go hand in hand, and sometimes they don't. And, you know, you're a great example of making your choices to support your health. And so I just kind of want people to kind of, you know, when you hear setting yourself up for success, it's also think about what success means to you as an individual, because it's different for different people.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a good clarification, because it hadn't even occurred to me that that could be interpreted to be like success monetary or whatever, because for me, long ago, I decided that wasn't how I defined success. I defined success by, you know, the health and happiness of our family. Every birthday when I blow out candles, that's what I wish for, is for everyone I know to be healthy and happy. Like, to me, that's what success is, because you can have everything in the world, but if you're not happy, then it doesn't matter. So, well, I think this is a really great opportunity to bring in our awesome guest who's been patiently waiting for us. So, Sarah, since the universe is upside down and you're in Canada, or some sort of justification in some way.
My book is done and you're still working on yours.
Something like that.
I will actually introduce our guest this week, which I think is maybe the second time ever that I've actually introduced the guest.
And the first time it was so awkward.
I know. I had no idea what to do. It's going to be awkward this time, I promise. Everybody, awkwardness now. So our guest this week is Madeline Moon. Her blog is moonfitness.net, and she also has a podcast, Mind Body Musings. And the reason why we wanted to have Madeline on the show is because Madeline is really passionate about helping women who are suffering from body dysmorphia, body image issues, and obsessive dieting. And this is, you know, a topic that Stacy and I are both really passionate about because we've had our own experiences with disordered eating, body dysmorphia, and it's been such a part of our own health journeys to deal with those emotional struggles related to food. And so we thought this was kind of a great meeting of the minds and a great conversation that we could have on the podcast. So Madeline, welcome. Was that a really awkward introduction? I think I rocked that.
You totally rocked it.
That wasn't awkward at all.
I rocked it. I'm going to start doing the introductions from now on, Stacey.
Cool.
I was good at that. I'm just saying.
You can just do the whole show. It's cool.
I don't think our show would be good if we split it up. I think you and I are way, like, the sum of the parts is, like, bigger than each individual part kind of thing. I'm just saying my brain's starting to work again, and it's kind of nice. That's all I'm saying. Madeline, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I'm so excited to be here.
Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Let's see where to start. So I kind of have a story like many other people. You know, I've suffered from obsessive dieting and body dysmorphia for pretty much as long as I can remember. I'll try to make this kind of quick, but basically, when I was growing up, I was just little tiny seeds of body image negativity were kind of implanted in me on accident, like usually happens. And those kind of things kind of stuck with me as I got older. And I'm very type A, and I'm a very all or nothing kind of person. And so when I became kind of fixated on my body, totally made it like where my self-worth lies, and became just super kind of obsessed with how I looked and how I felt and what people thought about me. And I went from being like a vegetarian to a vegan, and it started for ethical reasons, of course, but it ended up being like a weight management kind of protocol. And I was like really feared meat and thought that if I ate meat, I'd gain weight. And I then finally discovered bodybuilding. And I saw what the women look like on that stage when they're painted orange and the tiny little suits and how beautiful they looked on the Oxygen magazine covers, and quickly decided that was my new thing. So forget vegetarianism, forget vegan, all those ethical morals. I'm going to be a bodybuilder. So I immediately jumped onto the bodybuilding train and like focused super hardcore on, you know, making defining muscles and becoming obsessed with that. I used to run 7 miles a day. I didn't have a single rest day. And once I figured out that, you know, running makes you skinny fat is what they tell you, I began to lift weights like intensely, like nonstop. I would probably miss Christmas morning to go lift weights. I never did that, but I'm not saying that I probably wouldn't, because that's how like obsessed I was with it. And very soon it became, you know, I can't eat this unless I work out. And, you know, after a workout, I have to eat from this and this because I can't eat that because that has too much fat. And like, you're probably getting the picture now, but I was just very intense and focused. And I soon discovered, between my two bodybuilding shows, I discovered paleo and got really, really invested with paleo. And like being type A and all or nothing, I became like, I just ate so much fat and just had to go like all the way out and just made it all about the food, and then became obsessed with what my body was looking like, jumping from being the bodybuilder to the paleo cavewoman. And like, I couldn't relax and just eat for health. I couldn't do that yet. I wasn't ready, I guess, but soon after that, I met somebody who told me that if I ever wanted to be a personal trainer, if I ever wanted to be somebody, I needed to look better than I currently looked. So he basically had me like wear a sports bra and tiny shorts and in this wall-to-wall mirror room, like mirrors above, mirrors below, mirrors side to side. And he like pretty much pointed out every single part of my area, my body that I needed to work on.
That's brutal.
Yeah. It's one of those memories I forget that even happened because I just try to forget about it.
That sounds like some sort of cult activity.
No, I usually, when I tell people that, usually they're like, that's really creepy, or they say, like, that's a female's worst nightmare, but all of the above. It was just really weird, and for me, I was like, whoa, you're so right, I'm so fat. So I was way too not, I was not ready for that. I was not to the point where I didn't care what people thought. I had not reached that, I mean, you never really completely reach that destination, but I wasn't even close. So I quickly rebounded, and I quickly signed up for another bodybuilding competition. And on my blog, moonfitness.net, like, people were kind of, like, seeing the paleo stuff going on, and I was getting comments like, love the direction you're going, it's great. And then very soon I was like, okay, now, like, I even have a post where I'm like, bodybuilding Madeline's back. Like, I'm here to stay, and whatever. And, you know, then I started training for that show, and basically just, I was starved. I was very, very, very starved and very overtrained. And I'm not really sure what all kind of damage I did to my body in that show, but it was a lot. I mean, very low calorie, less than 1,000 calories and 2 hours of working out. So after that show, like, actually the day of the show, I decided this wasn't worth it. And this was the worst thing. I've just, like, the way I was living my life wasn't the way I want to live my life. It was very simple. It was just, this is not the direction I want to go. Like, where I'm headed is not, there's nothing about this that makes me happy whatsoever. This is all control. All of it is control. And I'm the only person that can really decide to end it. So basically what I did was moved. I moved to a new state. I mean, not that this is the key, but it really helped me. Like you were saying earlier, Sarah, like, nature and beauty. And I decided that I really needed something else in my life to find beauty in. And I needed to stop focusing my body, and I needed a new, like, I don't want to say hobby, because that kind of, like, makes it sound less than it is, but I needed something, an addition in my life that I could put more focus and attention to. So getting out of the gym and starting to hike. And I mean, I moved to Colorado and I got a dog, and very weird prescription, but both of those things has done wonders for me. And I kind of just went into isolation mode, and I wrote a little free ebook that I have on my website called How to Love Your Body Again, 10 Easy Steps to Stop Sacrificing and Start Living. So I basically just thought, like, you know, in the process of 5 months, what are the most important things in my life that I've added to my life that made the biggest difference in my mindset? It's really at this point about my mindset. And that's a miracle, honestly, because my body has always been the focus. It's never been the mindset. I've always put the mindset last. And like, often I'll tell people, you know, like, oh yeah, like, I have so much self-love and like, I don't care what my body looks like. I'm just so happy in my mind, whatever. Never really truly meant it. I was kind of trying to fake it till I made it, you know? And I can finally honestly say, for the first time since I was, like, a very vulnerable and blissful kid, that I don't really care. Like, I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned about my body, because I really do love it. And I've come to this place of just, like, really awesome ignorance of what people think about me, because I could really care less, because I'm just so happy with where I live. And, you know, like, having a family that rocks and having people reach out to me and say, how are you doing this? And, you know, here's my history of competing and binge eating and dieting, and I don't know what to do at this point, but I'm listening to your podcast and it's helping me. And, like, that is just unbelievable. That's seriously what kind of drives me these days, is having people listen to my podcast. So that's pretty much where I am today. I just threw a lot at you, but that's what's going on.
That's intense. and there's so many different, you know, I think, things that have sort of struck me in your story. One of it being, you know, this ideal body that women are expected to have, and the way that society in general perceives, you know, what is beauty, and how that's changed so much. It's changed so much in the last 50 years. And even, like, you know, there's sort of, you know, there's very different looking models on the top, on the front of, you know, a fashion magazine versus a fitness magazine. And still, none of those body types are really what I think a truly healthy woman looks like. I mean, we know from, you know, scientific literature, from you know, countless studies that women's bodies are healthiest when they have fat stores. Like, it's really, really important for fertility. It's really, really important for resistance from disease. And while, you know, I think that that would still, you know, a very healthy woman would still be considered thin. I'm not sort of saying that, you know, every woman should go out there and gain 75 pounds or anything, but that the super lean body that is so revered right now is not actually what is healthy for most women. And I think that a lot of us get really stuck. You know, Stacey and I come at it more from, you know, having both been, we've both been morbidly obese. We've both lost over 100 pounds. And we come at our sort of body dysmorphia from definitely a different side than you've come at it. But it's been, I think, a really important part of both of our journeys is figuring out what is healthy. And that's a very, very different way to perceive food, to perceive diet, to set goals, to be focused on health. And I think for a lot of women, you know, I get a lot of questions from women who they switch to a paleo diet, they lose a ton of weight, and they're 10 pounds or 20 pounds or 30 pounds above their goal weight, and their body stops losing weight. They can't lose any more weight. And Stacey and I have talked about this on a podcast many times, but you know, the first thing that we ask those women are, do you actually need to lose those 10 pounds? Stacey's got a great term, vanity pounds, which I just stole from Stacey. Thank you.
I don't know that it was mine. I probably heard it from the Balance Bites podcast.
Okay. Diane and Liz, thank you. We are stealing your turn. But it's, you know, that idea of, you know, well, I've got to be, you know, 120 pounds, not 150 pounds or whatever it is. I think that really comes from how much our society has revered these incredibly lean body types. I don't know that you mentioned, but did you used to model or were you doing more just the competitions?
So I modeled not being paid for it. I pretty much just tried to build up a portfolio so that I could start getting people's attentions and photographers' attentions, because that was like my intention. I intended to model. Like when I was in college, I modeled for my friend like a lot, but it was more like fashion stuff. It was like fun, goofy. Like, I mean, I still was super, super self-conscious. Like I would probably leave our little fun photo shoots like one time, like too many, crying, because I was just like not feeling like I looked that great. Like I would prepare for these photo shoots like months and months and months in advance, and I would be so stressed out that I'd be kind of bloated on the day of the shoot, and I'd be so upset. But
what's amazing just to interject is you are absolutely gorgeous. I have seen photos of you, and you are one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. So to hear you talking about like leaving a photo shoot crying, like that just breaks my heart, because you know, I would wish all women to have confidence and self-acceptance, but like you're like gorgeous. That's ridiculous I'm so, so happy that you've come to a place where you have more acceptance and confidence, because that's just tragic to think of you upset over something like that.
Well, thank you. That was just the sweetest thing that you could have ever said. So thank you. That was very nice. But I mean, you pointed on something that I really want to talk about, the whole like fitness and like fitness magazine covers and people that not being the actual ideal for being fit. So that's like a topic I'm very passionate about that, because I've been on the side of having that body that people want. Like having the like super lean abs and the long legs or whatever. They're just the same size that they've always been, but they just look longer because they're thinner or whatever. But I've had like that kind of body, and I just don't even know what to say, because I cannot like tell you how much and how oblivious I was to having that body, because it was not, it still was not enough. And I didn't see it as being a lean figure that could make Oxygen magazine cover. I was that small, but I was like not, I thought I was so far off from being that type of body. I still saw like pudge, and I still saw like, I didn't see any beauty. And I thought that I was working so hard, and just, I still looked like fat and so self-conscious. And I'd stay up all night on Instagram looking at these fitness models who didn't look that far from me, most likely, but I would keep saying in my head, man, I wish I could look like that. I wish I could look like that. Spending all my time thinking about how I could look like that when I could have been out meeting a nice guy, or I could have been out with my girlfriends, you know, having a bite to eat, or I could have been watching a movie. But instead I was on bodybuilding.com forums, and I was obsessively researching the different kind of ways to get rid of the vanity pounds or whatever. And honestly, the photos that I do have on like my Facebook page, I still have one of those photos where I'm like flexing in a sports bra and debating taking that down, because that's not really what I'm about anymore. And I don't want to send that message anymore. But for that photo and for a lot of those photos that I've taken, I can honestly say that is the weakest I've ever been in my entire life. I had no fat in my body, like fat as in the food. I had not eaten fat for a long time. So my brain, I mean, like I was really off, and I was trying to juggle a lot of things. I was trying to juggle my website. I was trying to make some ebooks to sell. I was like working with a Whole Foods company doing product demonstrations. I was also doing corporate wellness. Like I was doing a lot, and I really needed that brain power, but I was starved. But I was like, man, it's all going to be worth it, because I'm going to get those photo shoots. And then I'm going to send those photo shoots to people in California, and then they're going to notice me, and then I can starve for the rest of my life, and it's going to be awesome. But not really. That wasn't really good sarcasm. But that's basically the goal. Is like, and then I started, I eventually started thinking about how I really couldn't live like that and couldn't be anxious about every single photo shoot, because I would if that's what I was going to do. But fitness versus leanness, it's a completely different ball game. I was like 112 pounds when I did my first show. Normally I'm 130. So I lost a lot of weight for the first show. It was my first real diet. And I didn't mention this, but just so you can get an idea of like what this kind of diet was like. I was eating, there were six different foods that I ate for 4 months. And I literally mean six different foods. Like I had oatmeal, I had egg whites, I had lean chicken breast, I had green beans, protein powder, and casein. Oh, and I had 1 tablespoon of peanut butter per day. Just kidding. 7 foods. So I had that for 4 months, and I had it in the same order every day with the same portions. And I did the same workout for all 4 months, like the same split, I should say. So my weight was just, you know, falling off. And I thought it was like, no, like, yay. You know, people were being like, you look so good. And I was like, not looking good. I was not looking good. And that kind of confirmation coming from strangers feels really good. And it sucks, because once you start hearing people say, wow, you look so good. Like, wow, you've lost weight. Like, well, wait, what did I look like before?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, like, what do you expect me to look like? Do I need to look like this, like, forever? Because this is now the new standard. It became the new standard. You know, being 15 pounds underweight was now the new norm that I had to keep up with. And this just cycle just kept going on and on and on in my head. And finally, I just realized I could not lift the weight that I wanted to lift. I don't even have the right kind of hormones going on right now. And I don't know if that's because of the birth control I was on for so long, or if it's because of the crazy amount of training I've done the past several years. So yeah, basically I just wanted to point on the fact that fitness is not equal to leanness. No, no, no.
Well, and I think one of the things that was interesting to me was finding out, I was following someone on Instagram who was a, bodybuilder, bikini model type person. And at the Arnold, she was in her feed talking about how this was her last year because she wanted to actually be able to lift weight. And it was like a kind of interesting realization for me that these people aren't actually showing off the body that they've built from fitness, which is the implication, but they've created this eating disorder that gives them this quote-unquote ideal body shape, but in fact they are water deprived and full of health problems, and none of the women have hormonal balance, and to top it all off, their muscles are weak because of what they have to do to get their body to look the way that it did. But I think that the interesting thing for me as you were talking is kind of the realization for people that that it can be a different spectrum from what you're talking about, which a lot of people probably haven't experienced, but that, you know, the idea that you are going for this norm, so to speak, everybody has something that they think is what they should look like. You know, for me personally, I never thought that I would be kind of in the healthy range in the BMI chart. Like, my goal was always 180 as the smallest I would ever be, which is still obese by standard measures for other people. But even today that I've told myself, like, I got down under 200 and my hormones went wacky and didn't like it. And, you know, lost my period and lost my hair and blah, 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 blah. Like, my body is happier resting above 200. It's still difficult for me to look back at pictures of, you know, when I was weighed less and, you know, like, I have that mental struggle in my head, like, oh, I want to look like that again. And then I have to talk to myself, like, no, you don't. You don't want your hair to be falling out, and you don't want to lose your period, mm-hmm. and you don't want to feel drained and without energy. You know, like, I think it's difficult for all of us to kind of reconcile that in their head. And, you know, one of the things that I've done, as you were talking about how people commented, oh, you look so great, or, you know, you've lost weight, blah, 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 blah. I specifically, when I notice people who've lost weight in my life, whether mostly in the office or if it's in my personal life, I'll say to people, you look really well. Do you feel good? You know? And so I try to spin it in a way that makes them question if what they're doing is apt to making them feel good. And it's interesting the response that people get, because they're startled and they're used to hearing, you know, you look great, you look thin, you've lost weight. But when you ask someone, you know, do you feel good? Sometimes people say no. It was really fascinating. There was a guy at my work, and I was, we were chatting in the lunchroom about, you know, the things that we were eating, and he was eating a vegetarian lunch, and he was saying how he'd lost weight. And I was like, well, you know, that, do you feel good? That's great. If you feel good, like, to each their own. And he was like, oh, you know what? Actually, I don't feel good. I'm taking all these supplements and I'm just feeling so drained and I don't have any energy. And he was explaining to me classic micronutrient deficiency syndrome, you know, symptoms. And I'm not saying that everybody who's a vegetarian is necessarily going to be micronutrient deficient, but it's very common. Especially this male was not, he was already a fit individual who weightlifts and, you know, clearly had a lot of muscle mass on him. And I think he was feeling the effects of losing muscle mass from not eating enough protein. So I was talking to him about, you know, well, why is it that you went vegetarian? And he was telling me that he had cholesterol problems. And then we went into a discussion about cholesterol and things that can cause cholesterol to increase and things that can cause cholesterol to decrease and inflammation and, you know, taking fermented cod liver oil and, you know, kind of having this conversation with him and really encouraging him to eat more seafood is what ended up being my recommendation after we had this discussion. So he got the benefits of, you know, the natural fish oils and the seafood, but also getting some protein that he could feel good about, but, you know, was still lean. And a couple weeks later, he came to me and he was like, Stacy, thank you so much for having that conversation with me. I don't know what I was thinking, but a couple days on seafood, I felt so much better. I just added back all meat and I feel so much better. So it's like, you know, it's interesting the conversations that you can have with someone, because I think most people, you know, hear, oh, I'm going vegetarian, and they're like, good for you, and kind of like, you know, do the society shrug kind of thing. Or you see someone who's lost weight and you say, you look great, and, you know, you don't think about the fact that they're on Weight Watchers and literally starving themselves in order to lose weight and just going to, you know, bounce back and gain it back when they're done with their program, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But I do think that kind of learning to reframe the idea of not encouraging people to just get smaller is really important. And I think, too, one of the things that I like to point out is that healthy can be different for many different people. Like, Sarah's body ended up in a homeostasis that's smaller than where my body ended up in a homeostasis. And some people can be naturally really a smaller to begin with. Like, you know, I have a good friend who's been trying to gain weight in order to feel healthier. And sometimes, you know, the idea that we say things like women need to be fuller in order to, have good hormones can give the same scrutinization and judgment that, you know, overweight women feel when we're looking at the cover of, for example, an Oxygen magazine. So I just think it's really important for everybody to recognize, and I think that we all three do, but I just want to point out that, you know, every woman's body is different, and there are plenty of women who are naturally thin and who are healthy at being thin. And, you know, I just think the idea that listening to your body and eating nourishing foods and paying attention to, you know, hormone regulation and energy levels and all those kinds of things are really important for every woman to feel their best.
Soapbox.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. You pointed out something about like the fitness models and the being dehydrated. I think that's such a good point to make, that people kind of need to understand that those photos, like when I'm stepping on the stage and the photos you see of people before, like in the Oxygen magazine covers, or you know, they're posting on Instagram and you know, about to go on stage, blah blah blah. Well, that's the result of so much behind the scenes that you do not know about, like water dehydrating, not being able to drink water for 24 hours before, and taking out, depending on the program you're following, taking out all salt, or some people have salt, but a lot of times you have to eat super bland food for like months in advance, and packing food in a Tupperware container and putting it into your purse when you go to your friend's birthday party, taking it out of your purse at the party, asking the waiter to warm it up for you, and then eating your chicken in front of all your friends and having to explain to them what you're doing and then answer a whole bunch of questions. It also requires missing out on other holidays, like my 21st birthday. I didn't get to have that because I couldn't drink. And not to mention spending thousands of dollars. Your coach costs, I mean, if you have a coach, that alone costs like $500 to $1,000. Then you have your suit that you have to buy. Then you have your heels you have to buy. Then all the food. Then your registration. Then your actual card to compete with that division. And then you get ranked, and then you get your critique card. So all of that money goes in so that you can get a little piece of paper that tells you what you need to work on for next time. So, like, what? You're literally paying, like, $2,000 so that you can get six people to tell you that you need to work on this thing, this thing, and this thing. And then you go home, and then you eat a whole bunch of food that you haven't eaten a really long time, like milkshakes and burgers and pizza, because you deserved it, is what you tell yourself. You deserved it. So you eat all that. You literally gain back. I hate using literally. I need to stop. But you gain back all of that weight, if not more. I'm not saying this is for everyone, so I really hope people aren't saying this is for everyone, but this is a very typical scenario. This happens a lot. So you gain back all the weight and more. Your ankles swell up. You know, you're not dehydrated anymore. Your body is literally holding on to every single gram of food because it is starved and it doesn't know when it's going to be fed again. And a lot of people will be like, well, your body will burn it all right up because you're shocking your system. That may happen to some degree, yes. But it's also true that you will gain a lot of weight back because your body is not adjusted to that caloric intake. No matter what you say, it's not going to, like, maybe the first meal will be okay and you'll burn it right through or whatever, but if you continue to eat like a normal person, or if you continue to just, you know, feel like you deserve to eat everything in sight and continue to do that, you will gain all that weight back. And then that is when the psychological troubles begin. And that is when you start thinking that you were a failure because you couldn't hold on to that body. And that's when you start, you know, thinking that your self-worth isn't as, you know, amazing as it was when you looked that way. And you think you don't deserve this or that. And that's when you sign up for your next competition and you hire another trainer and you, you know, invest $2,000 more. So it's very, very important to know that those bodies you see after they've been dehydrated and tanned, yes, the tan does have a purpose. It actually does bring out your physique more and your leanness. People do not look the same when they're not tanned. When they're just white, it makes a huge difference. It can literally take, okay, I need to stop saying literally, but it can really take off like 5% of body fat, just that tan. Not even kidding. So that's a little behind the scenes thing of what goes on for those competitions. So healthy really does mean something different to everybody, everyone. And people really need to accept that, that their body's not going to magically just look like the starved, water dehydrated fitness model with a super dark tan one morning. They're not just going to wake up to that because that's not, they're healthy. It's nobody's healthy.
Well, I love what you said too, which I think is something that Stacey and I talk about a lot on this show, is about the importance of nutrients. So when you go on these really strict, restrictive diets for a, you know, the purpose of achieving a certain, you know, body characteristic for competition or for whatever other, you know, people are, you know, trying to get lean for a wedding or they're trying to get lean for beach season or whatever other goal it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be a fitness competition. But one of the things that happens when people go on these diets, I mean, even things like Weight Watchers, is they're not getting the micronutrients that their bodies need. And the consequences in terms of hormones is really dire. And what that actually does to your metabolism has long-lasting effects. And I think that's one of the things that I think, you know, I would like to see people take as a takeaway message from this episode is, I mean, not just the, you know, really scrutinizing your priorities in terms of goals and really adjusting your mindset when it comes to, you know, what you look like and thinking more in terms of health instead of, you know, achieving a certain number on the scale or achieving a certain clothing size or having, you know, you're being cut enough or whatever it is. You know, I want people to start thinking in terms of health, but I also want people to understand that diet is not calories in, calories out, energy, you know, too much energy and you gain weight, too little energy and you lose weight. You know, it's the ways that you manipulate diet in order to achieve a certain physical appearance is not the point. The point is eating the micronutrients that your body needs for all of the, you know, millions of chemical reactions that are happening in every cell. And you want those chemical reactions to happen normally, to be regulated properly. And the only way that you can achieve that is by consuming the vitamins, the minerals, the essential amino acids, the essential fatty acids, the phytonutrients from plants, by consuming all of that essential nutrition. And it's why Stacey and I are so passionate about changing the conversation from, you know, losing weight or, you know, being on a diet or even, you know, changing the conversation from paleo and just eliminating grains and focusing people on choosing nutrient-dense foods that are going to support health. And now, you know, while we're talking about health, let's talk about, you know, what healthy looks like. And I think that I love that you've really brought a different perspective than I think what Stacey and I, you know, can share from our own personal experiences, because it's very, very interesting. We are running out of time. Stacey's got editing to do, and I've got two little kids who need to be put to bed. But I was going to ask if you have like any last thoughts that you'd like to share.
I think the very last thing I'd like to say is that people, if anyone's listening to this and they're kind of like wishing they could get to that place of satiation and what I like to call thrivation, and where they can just really feel like they're finally released to be the person that they were meant to be, is to not be afraid to change. I often think that a lot of people feel kind of chained to their identity or to who they were as, you know, the girl that lost 50 pounds or the girl that did a bodybuilding show or the girl that, I don't know, went paleo and became famous for her amazing recipes. You know, someone who's not necessarily thriving in that, though. Like someone who is known for something but really wants to get out of it because they're not feeling the happiness anymore. And what I really think people need to do is just to listen to that and do what it takes to follow their heart. I mean, it sounds so cheesy and so corny, but I mean, I'm speaking from experience that it's very difficult once you feel like you've made a name for yourself or you've made a lot of progress to actually step back and say, this is not the right direction I want to be headed. And people need to just not be afraid to change. Like, I knew that my connection with food is very, my connection with food, body image, and weightlifting are all connected. So every time I go in the gym and I put on my Lululemon and I lift weights and then I have to eat a certain way afterwards, and it's just, it's all very intertwined. So I've taken a month off from the gym, which I never thought I could do. It's huge. Like, I never thought I could do that. I haven't been posting a lot of things on my Facebook anymore. I've kind of taken a break from blogging, of course not from my podcast, because I love podcasting and that like truly brings me joy. So people, just listen up, you know, don't be afraid to change. Don't be afraid to step back and become a new person, because that person might be who you really are supposed to be. So no, don't be afraid.
Awesome. So, well, I was just going to say before we wrap up, Stacey, I just want to have something I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show. But when this podcast goes live, I will actually be just about to do two major book signings. I'm going to be in Vancouver on Friday evening at Book Warehouse on East Broadway. I think that event starts at 5 o'clock, and it's a joint event with Russ Crandall from The Domestic Man and Mickey Trescott from Autoimmune Paleo. And we're going to be doing a short sort of team talks, Q&A, and book signings. And then Saturday, I'm going to be in Seattle, also with Mickey and Russ, at Elliott Bay Books. And I think, if I remember correctly, that's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And again, we're doing like talk, Q&A, and book signing. So I hope anybody who's listening to this podcast who lives in that area will come out and see us. And you can get all the details by going to thepaleomom.com/events.
Awesome. Well, thanks for making it so easy for me today and allowing me to have soapbox.
It wouldn't be a show without a soapbox.
Well, sometimes I can't squeeze them in, so it's always nice. All right. Well, we will be back next week with our exciting episode 100. Make sure, if you want to ask Sarah and I anything at all, to go ahead and get those in through the contact form on our websites, or by doing so through social media. We're going to put out those calls probably about the time that this airs. Yeah. We'll try to coordinate that.
We'll have another one before this airs, but definitely next weekend look for those.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Madeline. And just as a reminder, people can find you at moonfitness.net, and there's a link to your podcast on there as well.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Watch out for the cats. Oh my God, what a fiasco we run here.
And outro music.
Oh, please don't. You have way too much energy in your books in the printer.